Howdy, 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 my friends. George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. And I've got my good buddy, former, or should I say retired, San Antonio Police Department officer, Willie Cantu, law enforcement expert, I consider him. And I wanted to chat with him about something that's going on in San Antonio, a policy that handicaps law enforcement and impacts on public safety. We have a ton of stash houses and dope dealing houses that have flourished because of the open border, and police are helpless to go into those places to do what is called forced entry, not a no-knock warrant, but a forced entry. It's a policy that is a result of the woke city council and police department, a result of the George Floyd era. And it's creating problems, my friends, because we can see the amount of dope, the amount of guns. Where there's dope, there's always guns. The amount of crime that's going on. I wanted to get Willie to come on and explain to us what the handicap is, what used to be the policy that allowed them to fight crime, and what is the problem at this point. Willie, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, hey, George. Thank you again for having me on. This is really, it's difficult to explain in a sense to in such a short time, but it has to do, the root cause of the San Antonio Police Department officers not being able to conduct forced entries has to do with what happened, and I don't even know the year, but with what happened in Louisville, Kentucky with Breonna Taylor. And that situation, to explain, she was shot when narcotics detectives were conducting a knock and announce warrant. They had initially applied for a no-knock warrant, but when they got to the situation and they started, they probably received some other type of information, they decided to do a knock and announce, which is what everybody wants. They hate no-knock warrants. And I think it's important to explain the difference. A no-knock warrant means we are able to approach the location, whatever it is, and I'll just, for easy reference, say a house that we suspect is dealing, is trafficking in narcotics, and someone has applied for a warrant that was signed by a judge commanding us to enter and seize the evidence. That's what that's all about. We're commanded to do that based on the probable cause that we've developed that, they are in fact trafficking narcotics. I ran nothing but no-knock warrants, conducted nothing but no-knock warrants when I was on the SWAT team for 17 years. We didn't touch knock and announce warrants. Those were like almost, well, if it's going to be a knock and announce, it's not that dangerous, and therefore you don't require the SWAT team. That's the way it was seen. So we, the no-knock warrant applies with a group of tactical officers stealthily approaching a location. Of course, it's all planned prior. You do reconnaissance. You can even do aerial surveillance. You do long surveillance, watching it so you can get the layout of the location, see which is the quickest or the best way to approach from whatever side. Whether it would be we stop two houses down the way and then offload and then walk up the rest of the way, or sometimes you just pull up right up front and game's on because there's some people hanging out, but the whole thing is based on the element of surprise, and we want to surprise them enough to put them in this what I call the old crap reaction. It stuns them for a little bit until they can figure out what to do, and then by then we're up on them. And it involves possibly breaching a door, whether we have to peel burger bars with a pry tool and then ram a door to force entry and things like that. And then we flood the house and we saturate it with, the number of officers, and we control all the occupants inside so the place can be searched for narcotics or whatever contraband that we're seeking. A knock and announce is we approach the location, and we want to do it stealthily also because we don't want to give them too much time to react accordingly. And we're knocking, going up to the door and knocking literally, and announcing our presence as the police and demanding entry. And based on law, case law, we're supposed to give them a reasonable amount of time to answer the door. And no one says exactly what that is. So what's reasonable, I've figured out it's about 10 to 15 seconds. If someone sees you through a window before that, or they see you as you're coming up and they go inside, well, you pretty much announced yourself. And then you're running the warrant like you would have with a no-knock warrant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what that is. And now, I wanted to make sure people know that.
Now, important to note, I guess, and now this is just me assuming, that when you do an announcement like that, they're going to scramble. Once they realize what's going on, they're going to scramble and try to flush the dope away, aren't they? I mean, they're going to try to get rid of it.
Oh, no, George, no.
That's, really?
The main thing, and I'm being a smartass, but the main thinking with that is that these people are going to comply, and we just need to give them time to do it.
Okay, excuse me.
Yes. There's never been any time that I've done a knock and announce going, man, they're taking a little while. They're probably just stepping out of the shower and
cleaning up. They're cleaning up a little bit.
Cleaning up a little bit, right. it is the dumbest thing. This really comes from the federal side. The feds, the feds nearly, well, hardly ever ran no-knock warrants. They had to be specifically articulated to whatever federal judge they had to be able to do that.
So
it was normal for them. And we were like, that's crazy. We're not going to do that, because just as you said, our thinking, and people don't understand this unless you're standing in front of that, or, you know, by that front door and waiting for these people, because you're not thinking, oh, they're just getting ready. Like I said, you're thinking they're grabbing weapons. That's the worst thing. Loading up and getting ready to shoot at us.
Yep.
When we come in, you know, in an ambush, or, you know, they can shoot at us through the walls or the windows or whatever. And a lot of times, yes, they're flushing the narcotics. They are destroying the evidence, you know. So it's a dumb idea to think that way.
Oh, my gosh.
But no-knock warrants, you have to have a good team, a dedicated group of individuals like we were on the SWAT team, that trained in all aspects to, you know, drive up there, to offload certain people with certain types of weapons. Certain officers carried certain tools, maybe a pry tool. One had a ram. And, of course, you can't have guns in your hand when you're carrying those things. Some of them are heavy. Somebody has a shield.
That's got to be dangerous. I mean, I just can't think. That's got to be so dangerous.
It is, but it's fun. You know, I loved it. I loved it. You know, it's almost like a game of chess. You know, you're planning it to gain the advantage. And again, you have to practice and train well enough to be confident that if things do go south, you know, according to what, you know, people might think, somebody pulls a gun or shoots at you,
right,
that you can react fast enough and hopefully beat them to the punch, or, you know, react and take out the threat that's trying to take your life. But there's so many things involved in that. I mean, it's really cool, but you've got to have a group of individuals that are good. And because I've seen some botched entries,
mm-hmm,
and it doesn't work out as planned because they didn't do the legwork. And, you know, when I started SWAT, we ran by the seat of our pants. We didn't have a real method. It was. I mean, I'm lucky. A lot of us were lucky. And we just go in, and sometimes, you know, with four people, and you know, we're encountering, you know, you at least want to have at least two officers to one person. But we're going into houses with four officers, and, you know, encountering, you know, six, seven, eight people. You know, how do you control all those people at once? But, you know, the main thing, and what we're here to talk about, is that, and I don't remember, actually it happened right after Breonna Taylor, and I don't remember the year, because it's been a while now. It's definitely been, over 2-3 years, but the San Antonio Police Department has been forbidden to conduct entries, period, whether they're knock and announce or no-knock warrants, and especially no-knock
so
warrants.
So no, you cannot do an entry, period. Period.
Period.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
Because of the okay. leftist city government that we have. You know, because there was that big, all that crap about Breonna Taylor.
Now, and, that was in 2020.
Huh?
2020. That was three okay. year, 4 years ago. Well, roughly four okay. years ago, but, 3.5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, what they did, just like they tried to do with George Floyd.
Yeah.
She was supposedly a first responder when all she did was go through an EMT class. She didn't work in that capacity. You know, and there's still stuff coming out about that situation. But I believe had the situation, had they had a good group of individuals like the guys I worked with, and they conducted a no-knock warrant, that Breonna Taylor wouldn't have been shot. Nobody would have been shot, because you get in there quick enough that before they can do, you know, any kind of make any kind of dangerous or deadly action. But for whatever reason, we're still here in San Antonio thinking that's going to happen. And, you know, nothing is 100%.
Nothing like that has ever happened in San Antonio, but the policy was put in place then, huh?
Correct. And we were, when I was with Rope, you know, after SWAT, repeat offenders program as a covert detective, we were conducting warrants, and we were doing both. We were doing no-knock and knock-and-announce warrants. But all of a sudden, it became like, you guys will just not enter at all.
A
knock-and-announce warrant means you go up there, you knock and announce your presence and your intentions, and then you give them the reasonable amount of time, and then you are able to forcefully enter the location. And what's going on now, and since, you know, again, for a while now, if they don't, you can ask, and you can threaten, you can ruse, but if they don't let you in, you can't go in.
My goodness.
So you just got to walk away.
So that really, really plays into the hands of the criminal then. Completely, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, for a long time, or I won't say a long, long time, but of course they didn't know that. But these people are, you know, they're smart enough to know people, and they're like, you know, these guys aren't coming in. You know, certain people know certain people, and not all cops, you know, families are on the legit side. So they're eventually going to hear that the police aren't making forced entries. So, you know, it's just like car chases. They've realized that if you get, you know, a police car pulls up behind you and turns on the emergency overhead lights, just run. They're not going to chase you. They can't.
Wow.
So, yeah, that secret's out. So, you know, just take off. Of course, you run the risk of getting filed on later if they identify you for evading arrest in a vehicle, which is a felony. Well, not with Joe Gonzalez. He won't do that. But
as we have seen, yes.
We've seen, yeah.
Yes, yes. But, you know, again, this is one of the tools, one of the better tools, best tools that police have to catch particularly a dope dealer who's dealing out of a house, but you can't do that because you can't go into the house. So what do? You got to wait until the guy comes out?
Well, and I'll tell you this, and then I'll give kudos to the guys that I work with, the group that I work with. I don't know what they're doing now, to tell you the truth. I can't speak for that, but I can speak for the people that I work with right before I retired. We were actually getting dope, but we were being very strategic with it. So, you know, you have to be smart and establish plans to go around those restrictions that your own department has given you. So we would conduct surveillance. And like I said, you know, the dope isn't cooked necessarily anymore, and definitely not anymore in the location. So it has to get to that dope house somehow.
Yeah.
Whether someone delivers it or someone from inside goes and gets it. You know what I mean? So if we have information that, and of course we work with what we call snitches, confidential informants, information about those plans, well, then we can plan on how to get those people. But it's very difficult, because a lot of these, the ones that deal in high volumes of narcotics, they're very good at what they do. And you should expect that, right? You know, as good as a police officer I wanted to be, there's crooks that are just as good.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they work at their craft, you know, 24/7. I had to train when I was at work, and I wasn't always, you know, a cop 24/7, you know. But we figured out ways to conduct surveillance, and we get information about who was delivering it. And, you know, and really what people don't understand too is that we worked really hard at protecting the person giving us the information.
Yeah.
Because we knew it was dangerous for them. You know, we didn't want to, even though they're criminals in themselves, we didn't want that on our conscience that they were going to get killed for providing the police information. So we had to get really, really crafty at doing it. And we did it well.
Now, let me ask you this, because we are seeing in various places, in various cities, where they're turning around, they're recognizing, you know, the problems that have happened because of defunding or because of taking away the police's equipment in many cases. I mean, they're seeing that, the crime is getting out of control, and they're trying to reverse it. Do you think the city of San Antonio needs to reverse this policy about forced entries?
They do, definitely. That's the easy answer. But along with the reversal, they need to also be prepared for the fallout of again, the things that can happen.
Yeah.
So to me, what happened with Breonna Taylor,
yeah,
and it's no lie, the officers were shot at first.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Her boyfriend. So, you know, it's really not the officer's fault, you know. So that the issue is if they, and they've been talking about it. I have, you know, still have friends in the SWAT team, and they had been talking about how, you know, they can get these them back to making entries again. And I'm like, that's fine, that's good. But what's going to happen? What are they going to do if something that they don't like happens?
Yes, especially the leftists that are on the city council, you still have Joe Gonzalez around. I mean, what are they? How are they going to react? They're going to scream and yell.
Because again, you are not going to change their minds.
Yep.
They're especially when the anti-police crybabies, and we've said that before, the ones that they gather and probably finance to go and create havoc and cause these protests, when they get enough of them, then the city, it scares them.
Yeah.
They don't want that to happen, so they usually give in. That's where we're at now.
The city has got to get over that fear. The city's got, I mean,
well, they got to tell them, for one, you know, yes, you know what, if you want to protest anything, you have to do it within the parameters of the law and peacefully.
Yep.
Once
you riot, that the First Amendment does not protect you to riot.
No. But they need to know that if and when that happens, we are going to handle you.
Yeah.
We are going to come in with the SWAT team. We're going to hit you with gas if we have to. We're going to hit you with less lethal if we have to. You know what I mean? And you're going to get arrested.
There. Yep.
And
that makes sense.
That's right. So, you know, sing Kumbaya all night if you want. I don't care. But the moment you start blocking entryways or access roads or sidewalks,
breaking windows,
throwing rocks at the police or frozen bottles, then it's no longer peaceful, and therefore it's illegal.
Exactly.
But the city will not do that.
Yep.
Because these groups have such a hold on them. And it's cowardice. It really is. The bottom line, it's pure cowardice.
Yeah. There has got to be, the citizens have got to speak up, because ultimately the citizens are the ones that are suffering from the crime, because the police cannot be proactive. Period.
Well, here's the problem, and you know, the citizens elect the council members, right? They institute these policies like we're talking about here, and then crime rises, and then they wonder, you know, how to stop it. And they have these meetings, and they dance around the real solutions.
That's right.
The real solution is intimidation and more force.
You've got to show more force than the criminal. You know, that's all there is to it.
Yeah, but look at, you know, this is I don't want to get off the topic here of forced entries, but it goes even to the smallest things. You know, you can't use curse words at them because you'll get in trouble in internal affairs for using a curse word, things like that. That doesn't help. That doesn't do anything. And these people, they use that language all day.
Well, I mean, you know, they can curse at the police, but the police can't say anything. The police have got to be nice to them.
Sure.
Willie, bottom line is that the issue of forced entry is, with it off the table, with that policy off the table, the criminals are really, really profiting from that, literally. And if we're going to stop the big dealers, if we're going to stop the big criminals, we have got to let the police go back to it, right?
Yeah, they do. But I'll tell you what they've done, and I hate to be this Debbie Downer, you know, about everything or sound negative, but it's reality. Because they, for now, what did you say, for almost 4 years, that they have hindered the officers?
Yes.
And now you can train, and I know a SWAT team does it. They train and they train, but they haven't run any real warrants on real crooks. You know, we ran warrants all the time, and when you do that, you get better at it because you know how to do it, right? And the issue is, and it's been brought up, and I've said this, and I've got some friends on the team that'll say that they just think we can plug right back in and go, like, you know, not skip a beat. It's going to be dangerous for these guys because they're going to be new at it.
Yes, exactly.
You get what I'm saying? So they're going to be new at it.
I hear you. They expect them to get back and drive, and they haven't driven for a while.
Right. And you and I share, you know, with these stories that we see come out, and especially on police shootings, right?
Yeah.
And there's been a lot lately, correct?
Yes.
So what's that going to tell you on forced entry?
Yep.
A lot of these guys are going to shoot back.
They're armed and dangerous. Literally,
armed and dangerous. So, that's dangerous in and of itself. I mean, you got to start somewhere. I understand that, but you can't. You also got to trust, which we used to have, the officers in explaining their actions before you go and indict them, or you know, and even this police chief saying stupid things on the news before he knows all the information that doesn't help the officer in his actions.
Yeah.
And it gives way to the media, you know, along with the DA, you know, because we already know what the DA is going to do. He's going to come after you, that you just looked like you did wrong. Mm-hmm. And then, as we're seeing 3 or 4 years later, they didn't. So, you know, and
so the bottom on that aspect of, and I guess what you're saying is that if you're going to ask the police to endanger themselves, you better be prepared to back them up.
And you know how you prepare for that?
Mm.
You educate yourself like your job entails you to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be in that role of management, you know, managing the city, managing the police, you know, the being an administrator in the police, know your frigging job.
Yep.
And a lot of these people don't seem like they do. And it's been going on for a long time. Know your justifications. You're the head dude. You know, you should know better than some, you know, subordinate. I advertise as a detective. I wasn't even a supervisor. But you should know better than me because you're the boss, right?
Correct.
But they don't.
Yep.
But they don't. You know, and instead, especially if it's going to make them look bad on the news. And
more interested in the politics and in how it looks, rather than in fighting crime and knowing that you're fighting crime correctly.
Right. And it's that easy to speak, you know, just like I'm talking, and you know, you and I are talking. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not tooting my own horn. I've been there, right?
You've been there.
I can easily sell it to these people, and you may not like it, but that's just the way life is. Yeah. I don't like everything either, but I have to live with things.
That's right.
You know, and that's just part of life. So these bottom line, like you asked, George, is they need to take away that policy. They need to put these officers back to work, allow them to do the job that they've been doing, train more, and get good at what they're doing. And here's one more thing, and I think I mentioned it before, but it kind of, you know, was real quick. dynamic entry. So when you do a no-knock warrant, and even a dynamic knock and announce, if you're moving quick, it's dynamic movements. Those are the precursor to an effective hostage rescue. Wow. So, you know, just like Uvalde, if you're going to go in on somebody that's threatening people, yeah, you know, that they've already hurt and harmed people and they're inside some location and they're ready to rock and roll, the tactics are hostage rescue tactics. And the precursor that you need to get good at in the movements are dynamic entry.
Dynamic entry.
So, therefore, dynamic entry. And if these guys, these officers, are not good at that because they haven't been running warrants, how are you going to expect them to be good at hostage rescue?
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
If you haven't practiced, you know, it's going to be very difficult. Willie, we're going to let you go. We're going to let you go, but thank you very, very much as usual for sharing your experience with us. I mean, what we need to do is let people hear what it takes to be a police officer and how to fight and what it takes to fight crime, not to control crime, but to fight it, because it's got to be a proactive approach, in my opinion. So,
well, now, I mean, it always does, but even more so now because crime is high.
Yep.
And we got to put these criminals on their heels because they're pretty much conducting their criminality with impunity.
Yep, they are. I mean, it's very, very obvious. Well, you take care, my man. Thank you very much for spending some time with us, folks. We've been speaking with our good friend, Mr. Willie Cantu, retired SAPD officer and SWAT member, etc. He is he's done it all. Thank you very much, Willie, for spending some time with us.
Thank you, George. Thanks for trusting me.
You got it, buddy. Once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio.